Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay. We're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on The Gifted Season 1. Not only are we going to spoil that, we may spoil aspects of the various X-Men movies, possibly part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and maybe some other TV shows if they come up in conversation.
Well, I think right off the bat, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far comes to mind. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has aired 10 episodes. The Gifted was 13 episodes.
Yes.
And I feel that The Gifted did a lot more in 13 episodes, and not just because they had three more episodes.
And just to be clear, that's how far we've gotten into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far in this season, season five for that. It brings to mind also the Netflix shows for Marvel, which
Very
we may
true.
Spoil. Because they tend to be about 13 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be about 12 hours long. So they may have a little bit more space, commercials, etc., get cut out of this. And
this felt very major network in terms of less artsy than the Netflix shows.
Well, and less artsy than Legion.
Yes. And yet it felt very, this is meant to be binge watched. The episodes fed into one another. It was a big arc.
It was serial, but to me, a binge watching is something where not only is it serial, but the episodes may or may not stand as well in and of themselves. And it's, I need the next to keep going versus I need a little time to digest.
But I think some of it also is that if you hadn't watched, say, the first two or three episodes, it would have been a hard show to get into.
Not as hard as, say, Heroes.
Very true. Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Watch 13 episodes, understand the premise.
Yes.
I think they did a fairly good job of setting things up fairly quickly in the first episode or two.
Yeah.
And moving from there. I think there was a clear through line, very strong, from episode to episode over the 13. But I felt each one also had enough of a beginning, middle, and end that it stood separate.
Well, some of the stuff that they did early on that was just kind of a, really, this is what you decided to do. And I'm thinking specifically of the Sentinel Services agent coming to the door with the guns of the family and just being really over the top. And in part because this is a prosecutor's family. You have every reason to think this family is going to work with you in upholding the law. So why are you taking such an aggressive stance in dealing with them? And yet you come 8 episodes later and that prosecutor and his wife come to that agent's door with a gun in hand. And when the wife can't understand, why are these people so against you? Why do they feel so hurt by you personally? And the wife of the Struckers says to the wife of the agent, you know, I remember how I felt when your husband came to my door with a gun.
Yeah, there's definitely some reversal type stuff like that. Very good character arcs, by and large, for the main characters.
Yes. I think this may be the best role Amy Acker could have taken.
I would agree with that. She's playing the normal mom in an abnormal situation.
Yes.
Versus the character she's played on Angel, Dollhouse,
Person of interest.
Thinking there's somewhere else we've seen her too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it seems like almost everywhere she has popped up, her acting talent has shined through. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. She is amazing at playing the deranged, crazy, evil bent. I wanted to see her play the woman you could believe was the woman next door. And to see the woman next door who on the outside looked like she had the Cleaver family.
Right, right.
And once you got into the household and into the family, and the more you learned, the more you realized, no, it wasn't that. and she's holding it all together, and she's holding her family together, and she's a natural leader in the group they end up with. And it's, I may not understand these people. I may have had the wrong impression of these people, but I'm a nurse, and mm-hmm. I'm going to help them.
She did a very good job. I would say most of the people they cast, I thought, did a good job. Yes. There were one or two, not so much.
Who are you thinking?
The one who played Dreamer. Mm. I didn't particularly care for the character or the actress. And Lorna was a bit over the top, a little in terms of the attitude and stuff like that.
For me, Lorna just kept being too Jessica Jones. And I had to keep reminding myself this is not Jessica Jones given powers.
Mm-hmm. There were times both characters worked well.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think they were as solid as any of the Struckers or like John Proudstar.
Dreamer was there to serve a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Dreamer was there...
Two purposes. The memory thing and then getting killed.
I mean, she... Well, I mean, I could run down a list of you needed Dreamer because she put Clarice and John together.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that almost right from the start on up and down. But when you got to her death, I was okay with her dying. If Clarice had died, I'd have been crushed.
Yeah, I would have been very surprised as well, because that actress has done a number of other things. It's funny because a lot of the shows she's been on have lasted about a season or whatever, not so much. Jamie Chung, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the character of Blink, while in the mainstream Marvel universe, originally lasted just about long enough to get killed, an alternate timeline version became the leader of the Exiles. That series lasted for, I think, like 100 issues. She wasn't in all of them, but she was in most.
When she was a good character. She had a good arc and growth throughout it. Dreamer had some growth, some evolution, and an arc. And you saw her go from recognizing, okay, my power, my actions have consequences, but the greater good is always going to trump that. And whatever I believe is the greater good is going to trump that.
One of the things that I felt was going throughout this series was not only the theme of bigotry, which we'll get to in a minute, but that of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Do the ends justify the means? Is it whatever it takes? Or do you have to have that moral center or whatever?
When the more entertainment I consume, whether it's reading, watching TV, watching movies, whatever, the more I realize that one of those recurring, and it feels unfair to call it a device, but one of those recurring things I see in things is how often a character's actions create their enemy.
Yes, there are a lot of times where if the protagonist hadn't done anything, or particular things at the very least, their main antagonist down the line would never have come to be.
There, and this show had just so many cases of if Esme had not killed all of the Sentinel Services people except Turner, I guess is his name, at the Trask Industries escape. I mean, she had power over their mind. She didn't have to shoot them or have them shoot one another. Well, she could have done something else. She could confine them on the bus. Something.
There's a lot of justice versus anger and revenge and
but she,
a tit for tat kind of a deal where it keeps escalating.
She created an enemy out of someone who was tipping to our side.
But you could take a step back and say that the other side's actions led her to that position.
Well, we don't know what happened to Esme.
My point is everything we're led to believe.
Yes.
Is on both sides, people are getting pushed, and it almost doesn't matter who started it. Once you've gotten enough shoving around, it's just a brawl.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings up the whole kind of bigotry aspect. Mutants are always used as kind of the allegory for prejudice and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, I agree with it. On the other hand, it does take a different bent when it's one thing to say, hey, a person of a different race, nationality, religion, or whatever, you know, being prejudiced against them, when from a scientific, empirical evidence basis, we're all more or less the same. Not exactly the same. Some people are smarter, some are stronger, some are faster, whatever. But from a genetics point of view, people are people are people.
Yeah.
I think with mutants, people who can fly are different than those that can't.
Yeah.
People who can shoot laser blasts out of their hands, their eyes, whatever.
Well, and
there's a justification for the fear.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to say, we are in a culture of fear, and this played on the culture of fear.
Well, I would think if you had a subset of humanity that developed these sorts of powers, that would engender a culture of fear, even if every one of those people used it in an altruistic manner.
Yeah.
First off, there would be jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd also be the, yeah, but what if they don't do it that way?
Yeah.
Because there would be people who would say, well, if I had it, I would do this. They would project. They would fear that projection.
Yes.
So it's not even on the people with powers
mm-hmm.
that causes the downfall.
Yeah.
It just seems inevitable because, I mean, a lot of the episode arc plots and stuff throughout the arc are, you know, about protesting mutants or protesting, you know, protesting of the mutants kind of a deal.
Humanity first.
Yeah. Well, humanity first, but also mutants protesting against that.
Yes.
And, you know, if you, you know, as I was watching, I'm thinking, well, were that real, what side would I be on?
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly, if you're a mutant with powers, you're unlikely to be on the humanity first side. There's no reason to be.
And yet we saw a mutant in the audience of the humanity first speech.
Yes, we did, but that was under the control of Dr.
Campbell.
Dr. Campbell, who had been turning mutants and mind controlling them. So I don't think he was necessarily there of his right mind.
I didn't say he went there, chose to be there, but I found it entertaining that there was a mutant in that audience.
Well, there were, yeah, my point is a mutant wouldn't choose knowingly, I think, in most cases, to be anti-mutant. It just comes down to, if you are a regular Joe living in that universe, and you just see all this wanton destruction and whatnot, there comes a point of something's got to be done about that. So I get that aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that is prejudiced in the same way against somebody of a different religion or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to say people can choose their nationality or their ethnicity or anything of the sort. They can't,
But this is a prejudice based on a fear of something destructive. Something that could be destructive, and that's where the fear comes from.
It's a fear based on a very empirical inequality. And it's not even the destructive nature of it. It's that they have an inherent advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And I would still think it would be wrong to just, you know, imprison such people.
When, I mean, I was watching it and almost from the moment Esme arrived, I'm like, she's manipulating people. Why are they not feeling manipulated? Why are they not upset once they realize they're being manipulated to the point I would be upset?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that they just calmly accepted, you know. Why do they then work with her when they realize that she is upping a war where they're trying to bring it down to a more peaceful level? They're trying to coexist.
She was trying to rescue her sisters.
Yes, and that was her only focus.
And presumably, there's only the three out of the five from the comics. And at one point, there were five, but they got whittled down. Two of them didn't survive. I thought the way they introduced Esme into the series was well done. I thought the use of the sisters, particularly the way they had the one actress playing the three parts concurrently, very well done, because there was also a matter of the timing of the delivery of the lines.
Yes. Yeah.
I would love to see the editing.
Yes. Yeah, I was thinking that too. For me, introducing her was a turning point in the series.
I would agree with that.
And not just because we were moving into the Hound's arc.
Well, and I think with the second season, which I know they've gotten, we're going to have Esme or one of the other sisters, or all three of the sisters, whatever, but them and Lorna as the power players in that camp versus the Struckers, and then Eclipse, Thunderbird, and Blink as on the other side of the mutant camps.
And they played fair from the start of our arriving at headquarters about not everybody was accepting of the Struckers, mm-hmm. not everybody was in total agreement about how things were being done or what was being done. the rifts and the disagreements. So when sides were chosen at the end, they made sense.
Yeah. I thought they did a good job with that. I was surprised by some of the characters we saw throughout the series.
Okay.
Thunderbird, John Brown's star in particular, is the leader of the Underground. He was one of the mutants introduced in Giant Size X-Men, one of the new X-Men there. And I think he survived that issue, maybe, maybe not. I forget. I'd have to go reread. But even if he did, within a few, he was gone and killed off.
He did well here as a character and the actor, Blair Redford.
Did a great job.
Yeah, he's got some Freeform series behind him. So I guess my point is more of the ABC family aimed at more of a college-age audience. Background plot-wise, story-wise. So to me, this took him into more of an adult drama than what I'd see him in.
A solid anchor.
Yeah.
For the show, the team, the group, whatever you want to... angle you want to look at it from.
Mm-hmm.
Dreamer, I don't know if she was from the comics or not, but there have been others with similar-ish kind of memory powers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, we saw, just for a minute, a kid with a bunch of eyes or whatever.
Yes.
I forget what his name is, Eye Boy or something, you know, incredibly clever like that. But getting some of the lesser used mutants, Sage was a supporting cast character here. She's from one of the comics.
I was surprised she wasn't opening credits, given how much we saw of her.
I think they were, yeah. Well, when you've got Polaris, you've got Thunderbird, both of which have been X-Men. You've got Eclipse, that is actually the code name that Sunspot went by in an alternate timeline. Sunspot was one of the new mutants who had solar power.
Mm-hmm.
He basically turned dark and got super strong and was Brazilian. Whereas this one does light casting, lasers, that kind of stuff.
Heat. Yeah. Yeah, I felt Sage's powers, I'm not going to say they changed, but they were used differently when we first saw her versus later in the season. In the beginning, she was more a statistical analysis, if you will. This has an 82% chance of success, that kind of...
I think it was just that she's really smart and could do the math.
Yeah. And then later, as the episodes progressed, we were seeing her on the computer. She was their tech guru, which, I mean, it's the same set of skills, basically, but being used very differently.
Yeah. And that's very much how she was in the comics. Trying to remember when she was introduced. She was in Extreme X-Men for a while. And has kind of... She's still around, but not used. I thought the Struckers were an interesting family to bring in. In the comics, it was Baron Von Strucker and then his two kids. They've since kind of pushed that back to World War II. So now we've got... It's Andre and Andreas or whatever.
Yes.
Strucker. And then it's the grandkids of Andre, with Reed and,
great grandkids.
Great.
Andre to Otto to Reed.
You're right. Great grandkids. That's what happens when you start telling stories in the '60s and then do a TV show and, you know,
yeah,
50 years, 60 years later, the ability to kind of rip stuff apart, which was kind of sort of a telekinesis, but not a standard type. There was never a bend the spoon or move the coin kind of training, which surprised me. And then the daughter's ability to do shields or kind of pull things together and solidify the air. Those were kind of new. You know, I would be hard-pressed to name any mutants that have those specific powers. There are similar-ish ones, of course.
Well, and then not talking about the holding hands, but the way they combined their powers with, like, the prison bus. I found that interesting.
The way they used them in unison.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
I liked a lot. When, because the Strucker twins in the comics, they would do the holding hands, they'd have the crazy power, whatever. And what we get here from Reed, the dad, his father, is that not only are they mutants, but they're mutants on another level.
Yeah.
Which the Omega level mutant is big in the comics. And there are a couple of those, and they're just, wow, they're dangerously powerful.
But that's why it annoyed me when they were in jail or prison or whatever we're going to call at Trask Laboratories, and they had the suppression collars on that were the same colors everyone had on, and they were in cells side by side where they could touch one another, but they never tried clasping hands and seeing if they could break one another's collars off.
That also went back to Lorna having a collar in one, and she was trying to break out of the thing versus just monkey with the collar.
But they never tried combining their powers to see if they were stronger than the collar when they were together.
When they were getting tested in that, and they were in the animadium-laced room or whatever, and they kind of, you know, pushed the wall there or whatnot, I thought that was kind of fun.
That was.
Both in terms of just how powerful are they, but also character moment.
Yes, yes. There was a lot of good character moments in that room.
And the scientist doctor guy, played by Gara Dillahunt, who was in Justified.
Yes.
He was in Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yes.
A few other things. Talented actor doing a great job here.
Yeah.
Not likely to be back for a second season.
Yeah, and I didn't feel that was necessary. I wanted them to just break the landing gear. I didn't think what Lorna did was called for.
Yeah, this scientist was going off with the senator in a plane to go rush some legislation through Congress, because, of course, that's how you do it. And Polaris crashes the plane, destroys it.
Yeah.
And
I really thought just breaking one piece of landing gear before takeoff, because she's there for 10, 20, 30 minutes before takeoff. She seems to be there before the plane is loaded.
Agreed. It comes down to that would slow them down, not stop them.
But it seemed like that's all they needed in that moment. I mean, yes, what she did is a long-term solution. I get that.
Well, I don't think it is. I think it's a long-term problem because it gives the other side even more reason to go after mutants.
And that goes back to what I said earlier of there are just so many moments throughout the series of, and this is a prime example, you took somebody who didn't like you and made an enemy.
Well, it's a little different than in S.H.I.E.L.D. where I felt like they kept spawning Hydra.
Yes.
You know, you are your own enemy, whereas here people are doing things that are exacerbating the situation versus solving them.
Yeah.
But
and I think that's why I wanted her to just break the landing gear. Delay what he's trying to get to DC because he feels he has to do it today. And by not taking lives, you're not being the evil monster he's trying to paint you as.
Certainly not taking the lives, I completely agree. I don't know that the landing gear would have been the right approach since Esme or one of her sisters, two of her sisters were there. You could have done a little bit of a mind blank.
Yeah.
Just it. They know about it, but it's not urgent.
Yeah.
I thought that's, the mutants are in a bad position, both being hunted, imprisoned, brainwashed, experimented on, etc. But also from just a PR point of view.
Yes.
Anything they do that's too literally offensive becomes offensive.
Yes.
To humans and furthers the human first movement.
Yeah.
And they've, some of them, Eclipse in particular, were very cognizant of that.
Yeah.
Lorna was very much, but we've got to do it anyways.
Well, and Lorna being pregnant, it was all about protecting her child, making a better world for her child immediately. And I thought it was interesting the way they put her opposite the Struckers, who were saying, we have children who are already outside the womb that we're trying to protect. And thanks to you, our children ended up first in prison and then being tortured in a lab. And you don't sound worried about protecting our children.
Well, in fairness, the prosecutor for Lorna was
true.
The father of the Struckers, you know.
He had a little to learn.
So, and watching that character arc was fun.
I'd say that character went through probably the most extreme roller coaster in terms of going from prosecuting mutants and not fully understanding mutants don't always have control, they have to learn about their abilities when they're first exposed, etc., to not only learning his children are mutants, but then to discovering that when he thought he had leukemia as a child, it was his father suppressing the X gene.
Well, I don't want them to do a time travel episode I think it would be very interesting to see the Reed Strucker at the end of the season go back 6 months, maybe even less, to encounter the Reed Strucker before then.
Yeah.
You know, and just because they'd be on opposite sides of the issue.
Yeah.
And the younger one just would not find that fathomable.
Well, one of the things I thought they did really well was Reed Strucker's knee.
Mm-hmm.
The first time he walks in as the prosecutor to face Lorna, and she's in that plastic cell, and she's like, you humans forget there's metal everywhere, and she triggers her powers, and she's like, your knee, for instance, and makes him grind in pain because she's playing with screws.
Yeah.
After some knee surgery he's had, you know, and it's kind of an awakening and awareness to him of, and like you're saying, we fear because we realize what we might do in her situation.
That made me respect Sentinel Services less. They've got her in a plastic prison. This is a world where the X-Men clearly exist. They've presumably imprisoned Magneto. There should be very clear standard protocols.
Don't air the cell?
If you no metal allowed.
Yes, yeah.
Complete, just like you're going into an MRI or something.
Yes. Well, but several episodes later, poor Strucker's life has fallen apart. He has not only been imprisoned, but he's now in a prison bus side by side with Lorna in a plastic cell next to her.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I realize we don't agree on anything, but just promise me if the moment to escape comes, you'll help me take it.
Mm-hmm.
And when the two of them are now, they've knocked out one of the guards and they're in a, we could escape if only we had something to break our bonds and get through that plastic door. And he looks there and he says, rip out the screw in my knee.
Mm-hmm. What got me is that for a little while after that, he was limping, but by the end of the season,
it was much more subtle, but I was watching. He was still favoring one leg.
All right.
Which I thought was interesting. To me, that was an actor who paid attention.
Yeah. And by and large, I thought the actors were a bit more aware of those sorts of things mm-hmm. than I think is standard.
Yeah.
And for a show where so much is going on that's not physical effects on the set.
Yeah.
There was one or two times, like near the end, when Blink opened the portal for them to get up to that balcony, when John kind of ducked down to go through the portal, because I think the actor wasn't quite sure how tall it would be, kind
of. Yeah. Well, and frequently before that, she had been saying it's hard to make a big portal.
Mm-hmm. Again, so it was fair, but it was funny.
Consistency within the actors. Sometimes the directors were less consistent than the actors were, because that was the episode where, for the first time, someone other than Blink went through the backside of the portal.
That didn't bother me much, but...
It was just new.
It raises some questions, because when Blink was having the problems early on and had kept opening the portal to the road, we only saw it from the one side, and it would have been interesting if at that point they realized it was a two-sided portal. There were a lot of, I mean, again, going with that and the other stuff with Esme being three places at once, the effects on the show were terrific.
Yeah.
On TV shows, it's not uncommon for it to be, well, by and large, they were good, but man, the one, they didn't quite pull it off that episode. They were a little rushed, a little under budget, whatever.
Yeah.
I would be really hard-pressed to name, I can think of one, but any other time where I thought the effects were not so good.
Which one didn't work for you?
I was going to say when Blink is having the problems and the portals are literally flying all over the place.
Yeah, I didn't care for that.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why the portals were on the move.
To me, it wasn't that they were on the move, although I was questioning why two and why so many, but that they seemed to be very destructive but not leaving holes all over the place. Mm. You know what I mean? It was...
Yeah.
I think they could have worked that out better. And subtler.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's a nitpick. All the other times, everything from they've got somebody lifting this huge heavy rock thing, which is probably just styrofoam, but still, they did it.
Exactly. They did it convincingly and well.
The illusionist. Although the illusionist, if you think about it, his powers are amazingly impressive. Not just that he could cast the illusions.
Mm-hmm.
But when he did it for the truck.
Yes. That was awesome.
He basically made the truck look like it split in half. One went left, one went right.
Yeah.
And the truck really went forward. But for the truck going forward, he had what was, you remember the Mission Impossible movie where they're going down the hall with the TV screen essentially in front of them?
Mm-hmm.
He did that almost, but in reverse. But what that meant is he was casting three illusions at once. Okay, I'll grant him that. One of them was kind of following the truck and was showing them what they would have seen if they weren't watching the truck, which was is from a vantage point he didn't have.
Yeah.
So he was casting an illusion that he didn't know what looked like. So it comes down to, wait, how does that power work again?
Well, yes and no, because he was up at the top of the grandstand.
Stadium or whatever.
So he could see down that road.
Right, but from the angle we were seeing, he was looking out and it was coming kind of towards him at a...
No, they went past and beyond.
Past and beyond?
Yeah, as I recall.
All right, even so, angle, but...
Yeah.
And with the Mission Impossible, and I forget which of the Tom Cruise movies it was in, it was one of the later ones, it was set up such for a single guard.
Mm.
It was tracking their eyes and it was adjusting accordingly.
Yeah.
But... it comes down to when we saw the truck drive by or whatever,
mm-hmm.
we saw the illusion wall or whatever. So it's not that he is putting something into somebody's mind.
Exactly.
He's projecting something.
Yeah, which was very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It was well done. It's just a little mind-boggling.
Yeah.
The eclipse bleeding light or whatever.
Which was inconsistent.
Yeah.
I mean, it confused the heck out of me the first time. I was trying to figure out what he got shot with.
Yes, there were a couple of times that was confusing. But the other thing along that is that was when they had encountered the robots or whatever.
Yes.
The drone things. Those stopped getting used later.
They came back after a while at the power plant.
At the power plant, but they were a lot less frequent.
Yeah. I think, A, they were expensive,
mm-hmm.
and B, apparently they went out for upgrades, because Turner had some line about...
Yes, he talked about them a time or two.
Yeah, they've been upgraded since the Struckers.
They weren't as effective.
Yes.
Now, in favor of that, they went with what they learned off the Struckers at Trask, of why can these two have such power,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that is unique to this versus the comics.
Mm.
Because in the comics, there are some Omega-level mutants that are just orders of magnitude more powerful. There are people like the Struckers that the brother-sister touch, they get more powers. Another good example of that would be Aurora and Northstar of Alpha Flight that both have super speed. When they touch, they can do a blinding light.
Mm.
So there's that sort of a basis.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole use that... make this magic gauntlet that, like, mixes the bloodstream of two.
Yeah.
And suddenly they can use their powers in conjunction or whatever, almost as if they have a hive mind. But I chalked that up to the experimenting, the brainwashing, etc. They're so pliable, it's easy to plant the same thought in both.
Yeah.
That, I thought, was new and was interesting in a kind of weird way. Going back to the collars, I'm really not a fan of... the magic tech collar to suppress powers.
Yeah, I agree.
There are other comics where it's literally something you can put in a light bulb. In the Powers comic, I haven't watched the TV show, but I might have the first season over on DVD or Blu-ray over there. It's a police procedural
mm-hmm.
in a superhero world. And in the interrogation room, they, of course, have the power suppression light.
Nice.
Nice, but...
entertaining, I should say it that way.
Yeah, it's literally unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, if you want to suppress a certain type of power a certain way or whatever, okay, that's fine. But having a magic one-size-fits-all solution, that it's a story cheat.
Well, on this one, they said the collars were tailored to the inhuman, to the mutant, sorry.
How would they have had the knowledge to know how to tailor it towards... the Strucker kids or something.
Don't know. But they said when Lorna went to jail, that each collar was tailored to each prisoner.
If it was just, hey, it's a shock collar and it's got a lot of sensors and anything goes a little out of normal, it'll shock.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But that's story conceit that's used a lot in comics, etc.
I can see that.
And it's kind of needed in these sorts of universes where people with powers are so feared.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only sort of equalizer.
Yeah.
Trying to think which other major arcs or whatever they did with characters and stuff like that. I mean, it was a fun series. It was, I was not sure what to expect with this.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking, we watched in what, three bursts, give or take? I was thinking after, I guess, the second one, if they had called this Runaways.
That's funny.
I'm just saying. Runaways, Refugees, The Hidden, or Living Among Us. Any of those kind of describe it. I think it's fascinating they called it The Gifted.
I would have almost gone with The Mutant Underground.
Yes. But I think The Gifted is really a very positive spin, mm-hmm. and I like that. I just thought it was hilarious that there was a lot more running away in this.
Yes. Yes, there was.
And it wasn't just the kids that ran away. The parents ran away. Even the grandma ran away.
Grandfather would have if he'd lived. I did find it interesting how there was a lot of references to the X-Men.
Yes.
The Brotherhood. The Hellfire Club. But no particular name of a particular X-Men. Or even Magneto.
Yeah.
Who was very clearly Lorna's father. Or Xavier. Or any.
All we know is the X-Men are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no real why the X-Men are gone, where the X-Men went. Just, they're gone.
I'm trying to think where things were left in whichever X-Men movie would have been at the most present point of the timeline.
Mm.
Which probably would have been X-Men 3. Because after that, we started getting the first class stuff.
Oh, yes, I see.
And moving forward. And then we would have had Days of Future Past and sort of a retooling of the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like for them to clarify if we should be associating this with the X-Men movie stuff or not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter too much either way, but I'm curious.
Yeah.
Blink has shown up in both. Polaris, I think, has shown up in both. But there's not even a let's go check out what's going on in Westchester and see if there's anything left at the mansion we can hide out in or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the X-Men up and vanishing is kind of weird.
Yeah. About the closest we got to what I'm going to call team fighting was when Johnny called out to Clarice to make a portal above the Hound that was a speedster that Marcus, I guess, had trapped. Yeah. And then he jumped through her portal and came down on top of her. But they were pretty much solo fighters, even when there was six or seven of them in a fight at the same time.
Really, the only other time people used their powers remotely in conjunction was the Strucker twins. Yeah. They're kids, not even twins, but yeah. It's funny because one of the hallmarks of the X-Men stuff is using the Danger Room, building up those sort of team moves at times. And at times, they're used a lot. Other times, they're not used at all. It's just a bunch of people fighting and having each other's back. But the fact that we went 13 episodes and never got anything like a fastball special, which is traditionally when Colossus basically takes Wolverine and throws him at somebody.
That's funny.
Well, you got somebody who's a hand-to-hand combatant. How does he fight at range?
There you go.
He gets thrown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just thinking that when Johnny and Marcus were at the Humanity First conference and they got attacked, Johnny took out his two attackers before turning on the mutant that was doing the grip, the hand, and harming Marcus, probably giving him a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the, yeah, yeah, I trust he's got his guy. Oh, wait, he doesn't. Thunk. You know, but it was very much a, I don't want to say each one was there for themselves, but each one assumed the other one had their person.
It's a shame that in that scene when the doctor has got the kid, basically putting a gun to the kid, but the kid doesn't realize that.
Yes, which was well shot.
Oh, very well done. Very believable and stuff. It's a shame that Clarice could not have opened a small portal behind her back for Marcus to shoot a laser through.
Yes.
And hit the guy from behind or something.
Yeah.
Those are the sorts of pairings or whatever, team ups, or you know what I mean?
The
attacks, the term I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I said, they came across as a group of solo fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, I enjoyed the show.
I did too. Like I said, I was curious going in as to what it would be like. If it was just going to be a family alone on the run, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a from motel to motel, a la the old, you know, Hulk show or some such.
Yeah.
But getting some characters that I would not have expected to get live action versions of, getting a sense that it felt like we were in the X-Men universe.
Yeah.
Minus the X-Men themselves, but okay, fine.
Details.
We got enough to field a team, I think, of recognizable X-Men. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple in the backgrounds that it's like, that could be this character or that character if they just give him a name.
Yeah.
That I was liking that. I'm curious where they go next season.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a three-prong thing of the underground, Lorna's split-off group, for lack of a better term, we'll call it the Sisterhood. Because it's not the Brotherhood, but well, it's not the Underground.
Seems to be the Hellfire, but I'm not sure.
Hellfire, fine. I was just thinking with Esme and Lorna as the leaders, the Sisterhood makes sense.
Okay.
But then also what's going on with Sentinel Services.
Yeah.
And just the whole...
With Turner being fired from Sentinel, I'm wondering if he's going to pop up as the new figurehead, at the very least, of Trask.
Quite possibly, but I don't know how he would get to that, given that the Doctor, who would have been the likely one to put him in that place, is gone.
It
comes down to, is Hellfire connected? Hellfire can't be connected to that. They would be completely opposed to it, so...
I think the Doctor being gone is what gives Turner the in at Trask. They need someone.
He's familiar with their project. He's a good field leader. That makes sense.
So I'm not ruling out his coming back, even though he's no longer at Sentinel Services.
I expect him to come back. I just don't know how he would get used.
Mm-hmm.
I expect Trask to be a major factor of the whole thing. And obviously we got to keep the Underground. We've got to keep the other Splinter group since Andy Strucker went over there. And then the whole mutant human relations aspect is going to be a key thing.
Yeah.
The other way they could use that agent is he could try to fill the slot, the dead politician.
Oh, that'd be entertaining. Yeah.
So, number of ways they could go. I'm expecting a new headquarters, etc., since they just destroyed the last one. And they set up that they were going to.
Yeah.
We could take the whole building down. And sure enough, by the end of the season, they have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they were practicing with the vault. So.
Now, I was a little unclear exactly what the building was.
As was I. And why it had a vault in the basement.
It had a vault in the basement like it was a bank or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, apparently, it sounded like this is where Cyclops' powers had originally gone loose ages ago.
Yeah, I was a little confused on that.
So, there are a few things, again, where I'd like to see it tie back to the movies or some such a little better, or just say it won't. That's fine.
Yeah.
If it's its own thing, I'm good with that. Just let me know. But I'm looking forward to a second season on this. I hope they bring in a few other mutants here and there. I'm trying to think if there are any particular ones. I'd say, you know, this would be a really good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And... I like when they are. I like the way they're using the. I don't want to say the lesser characters, but the more fringe, peripheral characters.
Yeah, the ones who don't get enough attention.
Yeah, the ones who haven't been in the movies and stuff like that, or haven't been in there much.
Yeah.
Because again, Blink and a few others have been.
Yeah, no, but I can see that.
Definitely a fun series. I think it was strong writing. I think it was a strong cast. The effects were amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of fun. I'm also curious if next season it gets more than 13 episodes.
Interesting thought. Yeah.
I know it's got a second season. I don't know the length of it.
Interesting.
So anything else? We good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.